Good afternoon. I'll be talking about trying to increase tile drainage nitrate removal in bioreactors by treating more water. And it's an interesting follow-up to a couple of the presentations that have just been made. I'm speaking from the point of view of the northern reaches of the Mississippi River Basin, upper Mississippi River Basin in Minnesota, the North Star State. And as was mentioned in the first presentation, the 12 states in the Mississippi River Basin have each come up with nutrient reduction strategies to reduce the nitrogen and phosphorus loading to the Gulf by 45%. That's true in Minnesota as well. So how can that be done? Just some basic logic here. We could have the same flow and reduce the concentrations of all that flow by 45%. That would be a great trick. Or if somehow we could maintain the water and manage it properly, the concentrations could stay the same and we could try to reduce the flow by 45%. That's a real big trick. But obviously we're probably trying to shoot for some kind of combination in reductions in flow and concentration, and I guess really the presentation on controlled drainage is somewhat trying to do that. Well, just looking away from the techniques that we're talking about here in terms of denitrification techniques, if we look at infield management reductions, there's only so much that they can get us, better management of nutrients. And this is one particular sample where we were working on a very large dairy for almost a decade, and we saw about that kind of reduction in nutrient loads. But that was reducing manure applications, which were very high, and doing some other things in field. So maybe we get 20%, but we can see there's a lot of opportunity to try to treat the water that's leaving the field. So this is our research site that I'll be talking about. One person one time said he thinks we'd learn more if we just studied intensely one hydrograph, one event, compared to doing a whole bunch of studies. So we're going to kind of focus on one location here. But the interesting thing is, and it's in the south on the border, this watershed is about 256 hectares. You can see it's about a square mile, almost exactly. And in Illinois, we just heard that they want to increase the amount of bioreactors put on the landscape. Well, how are we going to do that? 100 acres per bioreactor? So we could scatter them across there and get six different farmers to agree to put one in. Or we could try to do a community bioreactor and put one big one at the outlet. And in fact, that's what's been done here. And as a researcher, I was actually invited into this project after it was being built, more or less. It was being designed. So I'm not saying something that I've done, but we've come alongside this site here and tried to make sense of it and to see, does this make sense? So what we have here in this location is a series of cascading bioreactor beds. It's a pretty unique situation. Business as usual would be that water drained from tile drain, much of it's patterned, but not entirely, from this watershed into a 24-inch county ditch main going straight into the Blue Earth River in Minnesota, which empties into the Minnesota, which empties into the Mississippi. So that's business as usual. The wood chip bioreactor beds that were installed, you can see the dimensions in metric there. It's 25 feet by 135 feet English, and there are three of them in a row. A round structure with flashboard risers control the flow off the main line. There's also an interesting structure with a couple of chambers that were installed to reduce sediment. They were concerned with sediments plugging the bioreactor, so they put this chamber in. I'll talk about the impact of that later. So this diagram gives you an idea what happens. As the rising limb of the hydrograph comes, flow fills the first one. When it's beyond what that one can take, it flows to the second one, flows to the third one, and if there's any overflow, it goes on out. And I can tell you, it took several months of playing around with the flashboards to get this to work right. What is the alternative? One big bioreactor? Can you imagine? Here we are, business as usual. This thing would have to be longer than a soccer pitch or a football field. or even a hurling field. So what would happen, you can just imagine on the tailing end of the hydrograph how long it would take for water to be in that bioreactor. And we talked about unintended consequences, nitrate going to zero, opportunities for methane creation and methylation of mercury. That would not be a good design. So this is a very interesting concept. Some pictures from the construction of the project. It was actually started in December this particular year. Continued on into the winter. Very interesting. One comment I will make about the wood chips, I'm kind of throwing this in there because it does affect what happens hydraulically. They used old cottonwood trees that were taken from the ditches previous years, allowed to dry. They had this all in mind and tried to chip it up. The trunks were so big that the chippers didn't really chip it. They turned it into sawdust. And so bed number three ended up with a very small particle size and very poor hydraulics, and that's going to affect the results that you'll see later. So in April, the flashboards were pulled up, flow went through. We didn't really have good monitoring systems in there until August, so I'm going to talk about the first full water year of flow, which is about September 1 last year through July this year. We did do one bromide tracer test on bed number one last fall. You can see the residence time was 6 to 7 hours. We probably slowed that down a little bit in the winter time, but pretty typical numbers that you'd see here with the MDI of under 3. So flow looked good. This is the overall system precipitation input and outflow from the tile itself. Interestingly, this was the wettest period, and we're just talking about Illinois, how you've been dry. The same period, there was 8 inches of rain in September of 2016 at this site. They were inundated with water. They were going to have to put pontoons on their combines. And then along about a year ago exactly, there was almost a 4-inch rain. I talked before about trying to reduce the flow by 45%. We have to look at the reality of what's coming at the landscape now in terms of water. We can reduce 45% under a certain regime, but when this kind of thing happens, there's just nowhere to put the water. What happened here is the first couple months of operation, we can see here the accumulation of flow through the bioreactors. The green line shows how much went through number one, the light blue line number two. So these are additives. So we're treating, you know, over half the water or so. And then the big event came in October. And that really did something to the system because we could not understand it, but the more the flow was, the less the flow was through the bioreactors. And I thought for sure there was some kind of Venturi effect because of the velocity of flow, and we tried to work with it. Well, it kind of straightened itself out in December, as you can see, and things were going along fairly well. But another point to be made here is that every month this winter, and this is not normal for Minnesota, there was a liquid precipitation event of at least an inch. Christmas, we had 1 inch of rain. January, there was a rain. February, there was a rain. Consequently, we had flow just like Ireland all year long. That's not normal for us. But again, as the flow picked up in the spring, there wasn't much snow melt actually, but all the spring rains came through the system. And again, we had this strange non-flow going on. So the technicians at the site for the Soil Water Conservation District, I have to credit them with moving the flashboards and reestablishing flow. And so I'm going to talk next and focus in on a little shorter period of time, which was spring through summer. So I kind of broke this into the point where, you know what, we've got the boards sitting right, hydraulics are right, how does it look? Well, for the previous few months, we were only getting 22% of the water through the bioreactors. That's not very good. After that, I broke these into 7 different precipitation-driven events, and you can see the percent that was going through the system was 50% or greater, and the sum total, about 60% of the flow, was being pushed through the bioreactors. So that's pretty good. I think you saw, Hannah, you had 50% or something like that. So We'll look a little bit at water quality then. A lot of dots here. The black ones are nitrate concentration, and the scale is on the far left that you can see there. Inlet concentrations were running 15 to 20 ppm pretty consistently. And I will say another thing about sampling. In the first period, we had automated flow-weighted mean sampling. In this blue bracketed period, we pulled the samplers out for the winter and started with weekly manual samples. So they were all, we're sampling the inlet and the outlets at the same time. If the inlet concentration changed 8 hours ago and we didn't know it, then we don't really have a clear picture of what's happening. And you know, you think that doesn't happen, but then look at these three inlet concentrations that are low. That looks like the technician, you know, was bleary-eyed in the morning and switched the bottles, but we have enough other things that we're measuring from those water samples. That was not the case. So if we look at what happened then to the right, to try to get some idea of the concentration, nitrate concentration reduction, you can see bioreactor one was the best, about a third, about a quarter, and about a sixth. And bioreactor three is just not behaving. It's hard to establish flow in it, and when it does, it doesn't seem to be very effective. So one more slide here with results. This is showing the water temperature. The scale is over on the right-hand side, the y-axis there. And you can see what we have in Minnesota, the line is, the dotted line horizontal there is 10 degrees C. Over 50% of the days are below 10 degrees C, and far more than 50% of the water leaves the water, leaves the landscape at that temperature. Very tough for a biologically mediated process. So the nitrate removal rates, some kind of initial calculations that we've done here based on the May, June, July samplings. You can see the formula that I used there, but roughly four or five with maybe one milligram, or that should be grams of N per cubic meter per day, not milligrams, should be grams. So this is in the range. Someone earlier had mentioned 2 to 20 is kind of the range from the literature. And so the removal rate is about what we'd expect. So this is the summary. This is a larger system. It's very interesting, but when you go up to a larger system, there could be things that happen. What happened is that chamber in there was somehow creating a vacuum on the system and not permitting flow to come through. So that's something to be aware of. We're getting about 60% treatment. The removal rates are within range, and I think the only way to get more is to have more cubic meters or get a faster rate somehow. And basically, this is the challenge here, all these folks that have minds that think, if we have 60% of it going through, if we removed 75% of that 60%, we'd have a 45% reduction. So what we think of is in the yellow box here. We've been thinking about wood chips and microbes. Is there some other technologies? And we talked about this a little bit last year. John Baker is here, and there's some people working on some things that would speed that up. But also, I'm making a plea to any equipment manufacturers here, and they're up in the conference floor right now. Please give us some nitrate measurement tools for the field that are within reason for cost. Right now it's $20,000 roughly per pop, and I tried to get some this year for this site because there's so much to learn. I'm looking at Owen Fenton here. I'm so jealous. In Ireland they have a system where on six catchments they're measuring phosphorus, nitrogen every 10 minutes, and they have learned a lot about the processes because of that. So with that, I want to acknowledge that this is an effort with the Soil Water Conservation District. It's been really wonderful working with them. Department of Ag has given a technician and some equipment, so has the University of Minnesota, and Minnesota Corn is put in a little bit of money for us too. So thank you.
Did you measure any other nitrogen species? I mean, should nitrate, what about ammonia?
We did measure ammonium, yes. And very interesting, when it's cold, nothing happens. Nothing in, nothing out. As it warms up, I was noticing a little bit of ammonium load coming out. Very little flow. If you saw, especially July when the temperature starts coming up, there's a little bit of ammonia sneaking out.
How's the overall reduction there? If you look at ammonium plus nitrate, do you have like those numbers?
I don't, but ammonium is just tiny compared to nitrate.
So as far as what leaves the reactors, it's 90%+ nitrate?
Oh, more than that. 95, 98, 99.
No organic nitrogen?
We have done total nitrogen too, but nitrate, and I couldn't tell you, it's at least 90% of the total nitrogen. We all have been doing phosphorus as well. I didn't put anything in here because I'm still looking at it, but in these weekly samplings, it looks like we would have reductions very similar to Hannah's, 30-40%. However, when we were doing the flow-weighted means testing, it looks great. Oh, we're reducing phosphorus. If you get one of those blips in there, you can lose it all.
So, sorry. How can we explain the phosphorus removal? Is it adsorption, precipitation? What is happening?
I have an opinion about that because of a master's student that did some column work for us. I think it's microbial. I think it's biological uptake. And she took some of the wood chips and did X-ray microscopy and staining and so forth, and saw that the phosphate absorbing organisms, PAOs, were absorbing this phosphorus into their bodies. So I don't think it's like calcium or anything. Yes, Mark.
Four-inch rain event. Were the sediment traps full? Is it possible that there was so much flow and there was a lot across the top, and maybe there was a lot of sediment and it could plug some of that?
That's a good theory. I think what happened is the flow, the elevations are so close that as it went up in the delivery pipe from the field in the county main, it actually pushed the level in that tank up into those manholes, and it's not supposed to be there. The technician, this guy right in the middle here, Chad, he read the manual, and it said don't install this where the water level can come up into those manholes, and that's what was happening. So it was actually, I think it was somehow creating a vacuum, so we could get no head on the bioreactor, even though our elevations said there should have been head. But we've put a camera down in there, and it's not catching sediment. Sediment's moving too fast through it. It's not big enough.
So. One last question.
So is there any significant difference you're seeing in terms of nitrate removal considering the winter period and the rest of the year?
That's a good question. The nitrate removal, and I have worked a little bit on temperature versus nitrate removal rate, and it wasn't as clean as a relationship. From our column studies and what other people have done, we think that the Q10 is about 2 to 3. For every 10 degrees C that it's colder, you'll get about 1/2 to 1/3 the removal rate, and that's probably true here, but I just haven't worked the data hard enough to identify what it is exactly for this site. So thanks. Yeah.
That concludes our research portion of our session, but please stay. We're going to roll right into our community planning meeting. As I mentioned at the very beginning, this will be at the planning meeting where we elect officers for the Managing Denitrification and Agronomic Systems community. There's been some turnover of the audience, I know, so I'm Laura Christensen, Assistant Professor from the University of Illinois. I'm the current chair, and we need to elect a new chair starting in January, and then also a vice chair. Whoa, mass exodus! I know all of you. Taking down your names. But thank you all for staying. We have time to stay. I think one of the best things, we only have 15 minutes and we're going to keep it short, but I would like to do introductions. I know that's sometimes a little painful. But again, I'm Laura Christensen, University of Illinois.
I'm Guy Iverson from ECU, East Carolina University.
Morgan Davis from Iowa State. Gary Fireiza from ALS, St. Paul, Minnesota.
And Past Chair.
And,
is it Past Chair? Tyler Grohl, Iowa State University.
Chris Kim, I'm at the University of Illinois and also the Conservation Fund.
Owen Fenton, Chagas in Ireland.
I'm Wale from Woodside Climate Change District, Chicago.
I'm
Yaba Kiaska, Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I was then in front of the door so no one else could get out.
That's the job of the past chair.
Right, right. Very good.
Which is a lifetime
movement. Yeah, Lord Bin J. Kumar from Agriculture and Livelihood Canada.
So I will do just a little bit of old business to kind of give you an update of our community. Planning this session was our main event for this year. In 2016, we had a collection of special collection of papers come out, so that was the big event for 2016. For 2017, this session, including our first ever student competition, was a big event for us this year. We had 6 oral presentations, and I was also looking across the entire meeting agenda, our online program. There was actually 6 bioreactor presentations, so some are not in our session. I think that's something to think about for the future, consolidating presentations more. There's 3 saturated buffer presentations, all of which were in here. And there's more than 60 wetland presentations, and they do have their own community. I think moving forward, it would be good to think about how our community can integrate maybe with the wetlands community, because of course wetlands are an enhanced denitrification technology. So we might be able to pair up with them. And then there was at least 3 drainage water management presentations, one of which was in our session. And I think there might have been more of those controlled drainage presentations, but that's also a technology that I think we can lump in with enhancing activation. So that's the update of old business. New business. We did have a vice chair for this year, Dr. Hassan Gane, who had to resign his vice chair position for our community due to other commitments. So we're in the unique position of needing to elect both a chair and a vice chair. The chair will start in January. The vice chair will also start in January, but they have a year of kind of a practice year. So I'd like to open the floor for nominations for chair first.
I'm not making the nomination. Is everyone in the room familiar with the process and communities and how the system works and why it is we are electing a chair and vice chair? Is everyone, what useful
just
to...
for you to explain that.
Or...
you bring it up. That's a good idea. That is a good idea. Yeah.
Well, the overarching idea is there are a number of sections within the Agronomy Society. I think it's 6 or 7 or something. Under each section, there are a number of communities. So we are under the environmental quality section, and then this community is managing denitrification in agronomic systems. And so each community organizes one or more sessions, whether they're oral or poster sessions or round tables or other activities during this during the conference, and may organize other activities during the year. So conference calls, last year, the community had a meeting during the International Drainage Symposium that was held, which is unrelated to the Agronomy Society meeting. So the communities can organize things outside the meeting here also. But so because of the way the communities then are set up is that there is a chair and a vice chair, and they each run for 1 year at a time, and they follow the calendar year. And it's typically the chair that is kind of leading the community is normally doing most of the providing the leadership, writing an annual report about the activities that's going on, and who may, but it's not necessarily required to be the moderator of the sessions. And so it's not it's an important job, but it's not a hard one. At least I don't think. It's it does require just a little bit of organization and management. The primary thing is really setting up, getting the everything organized here to the annual meeting. Out there, community as a whole has 250 members.
Yeah.
They're about, and most of the correspondence is via email.
Yeah.
Our
listserv.
Might mention the monthly bigger meetings.
Oh, yes. What makes it even easier, but also very exciting, being in a leadership role is that the Agronomy Society organizes a monthly leadership meeting. It's a conference call. It's about an hour or less every time, but they provide updates about what's going on in the Agronomy Society and provides information relevant to the communities. And so it's a really good way of just learning about the Agronomy Society and how it works, and who's doing what, and new initiatives and that kind of stuff. Gary, anything else?
No, it makes it easier. I was the chair last year, and it really helps move things along. There's always someone to ask a question.
Yeah.
It's clear what to do.
So it's really good. It's actually quite fun being chair, and you learn a lot about. You learn a lot of other people, and you learn about how the Agronomy Society works.
With that, I would like to nominate someone for chair, Morgan Davis. Are you interested?
Yeah,
I would accept
the
nomination.
Yeah.
Do we have any other interested folks in chair?
Not chair, for the chair position, for the
vice chair. Mm-hmm. Do we need to you're Robert's Rules of Order guy, right?
Closed, then all in favor.
Do we need to move nominations?
Yes, I move that nominations for chair be closed.
Anyone second that, or do we need to second that? Okay, nominations have closed for chair, and now we will, unless we have a motion to accept by acclamation, is that a thing? Does anyone move to accept by acclamation? Oh, you guys, come on, Hannah. Okay, we'll go ahead and vote. All those in favor, sorry to drag this
out. No, that's fine.
All those in favor.
No,
all those in favor of taking Morgan on as chair, starting in January for our community, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Saying none opposed. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.